You're listening to KX93.5 FM.
FM. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's time for the Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
With your hosts, Dawn Price, Mark Miller, and Scott Hayes. The Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
It's Saturday morning, and it's the Friendship Show on KX93.5. I'm Dawn Price, here with the Friendship Show and my co-host, Mark Miller. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
And Scott Hayes. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Dawn. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. We're here on a foggy morning in Laguna Beach. We're hoping it's going to burn off because it's the beach. We don't want it to be foggy.
Good point.
I agree. We've got an interesting show today. We've got Sister Simone Campbell of the Nuns on the Bus movement is going to be here. We interviewed her a few days ago, and we've got her on tape. And then we're going to talk a little more broadly about progressive Christianity and its impact on culture and politics and social justice.
This is something that you've been wanting to do for a while.
I'm very intrigued by this topic. Yes, yes. I've been pushing for this in our story meetings.
But importantly, this is... I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, because you sort of have a position outside of the executive director of Friendship Shelter, and you're sort of involved in this in some way, aren't
you? For my church, I'm the outreach chair, so I'm responsible for getting the word out about these kinds of events, and I think it's important.
Awesome.
And are we going to be able to define progressive Christianity?
I hope so. We have two guests in our studio.
Wonderful.
Who can help us do that. But first, Mark had some was going to tell us about the upcoming fundraiser for the radio station.
There's big news at the radio station this week.
Cool.
Really, very big news. Because for the first time in 10 years, this doesn't happen in Laguna Beach. KX93.5, Laguna's only FM, has been given permission to host a music festival at the Festival of the Arts ground. Which is absolutely unheard of. Here are some of the people.
Is this Burning Man? Is this, what is this?
I don't think we want to categorize it as that, because I think they'd like to do it next year as well.
I'm teasing.
No, it'll be much cooler than that. Here's some of the people that are going to be at the festival already. Matt Costa, huge, huge opening act. And Colin Hay from Men at Work. Do you remember that band?
I do.
He's going to be there. Carly Ritter is a folk singer.
Nice.
Listen to that name now. Carly Ritter. Who do you think her dad is?
John Ritter?
Absolutely.
Really?
Isn't that awesome?
That is cool.
She's a folk singer. She's going to be there. And the huge sort of up-and-coming Los Angeles indie duo Trapdoor Social, which is a band that gets a lot of airplay here on the radio station. So
cool.
It's really exciting to have them there. Go online, get your tickets.
Is this?
Well, you know, I'm looking at this information, and there's all kinds of information here except when it is.
Well, we'll have to go online and find out.
Yeah, if you go to kx935.com, you can search around, and I'm sure that
sure.
The date is there.
Yep.
Here's the other good news. What do you think it costs to go to this all-night, huge musical festival extravaganza?
A bazillion dollars.
Not really. You can go for $35.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That's great.
Now, there's a $150 ticket, and that's like VIP, you know, have dinner.
All access.
Exactly. Meet all the stars and do that sort of thing. So if that's what you want to do, I'm sure you and your family, that's probably the ticket you want.
Yeah, but, right.
Scott and I will probably go on the $35 one.
Or sneak in if we could.
Ooh.
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 All right. That was Scott Hayes. Tyler, that was Scott Hayes who said he was going
to
sneak in.
I know the back door to that facility. I'm way up in the hills there.
Oh, that's right. We can just come down the side of the mountain.
Scott Hayes and Mark Miller, Tyler. That was only them. Never sneak in.
Check it out on kx935.com.
Great, great. Well, we're going to start with some music. And this week we asked on our website, on our Facebook page, actually, for suggestions for music on this topic.
Really?
And a little, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yesterday afternoon we posted, we're going to be talking about progressive Christianity. We have Sister Simone Campbell. What music should we play? Uh-huh. And Barbara McMurray, good friend of the show, good friend of Friendship Shelter, had some great ideas. So here's one of her suggestions, A Change is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times. But I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
We're back. It's KX93.5. FM, Laguna's only FM, and this is the Friendship Show, and we are going to transition now to our pre-recorded interview with Sister Simone Campbell. Sister Simone Campbell founded the, she's the executive director of Network, which is a progressive Catholic social justice advocacy group, and they, well, she'll tell us about how Nuns on the Bus got started. She was a speaker at the Democratic Convention. Mark and I had the privilege of talking with her on the phone earlier this week.
Interesting, interesting woman.
Yeah, fascinating lady. We're excited to hear from her. So Megan on the board is going to magically transform us back to Wednesday morning.
This is the Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Dawn Price, and I'm here with Mark Miller. We're actually pre-taping this. Good afternoon, or good morning, Mark.
Right, however you want to do that.
Exactly. And we're here today with Sister Simone Campbell, the Executive Director of Network, and one of the organizers, or I think widely considered to be the organizer of the Nuns on the Bus movement and tour. Good morning, Sister Simone.
Good morning to both of you.
Thank you for taking time with us. We're excited to talk with you, and I want to first let our listeners know that the reason we have you on today is because you'll be visiting Orange County in the next couple weeks. You'll be here Saturday, September 1st at Irvine United Congregational Church for a workshop forum from 1 to 4 p.m. The address there is 4915 Alton Parkway in Irvine. So we're excited to have you come to our community.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm a native Californian and grew up in Long Beach, so I'll be close to home. I'm looking forward to this.
Fantastic. Well, welcome home then. Will you tell us a little bit about Network, just to get us started?
Sure. Network is a national Catholic social justice lobby. We were founded 41 years ago by 47 Catholic sisters who came together and said, you know, we're doing all this charity work. We should try to fix some of the systems that are creating problems for our people that we serve. And so they decided to create not a, what they called not a new organization, but a web of relationships, hence the name Network, And in 1971 and 72, it certainly didn't mean what it means now in the technological age. But it was this idea that together across the country, we could work together to improve federal legislation that would improve the lives of people who struggle every day in poverty. So that was the beginning of it, and 41 years later, here we are, continuing the work, challenged as always, but trying to live the gospel in the midst of this challenging time.
Absolutely. And then about 2 years ago, I guess it was, you gained some notoriety with your Nuns on the Bus tour. How did that come about?
Oh, yes, that was just actually a little over a year ago.
Oh, was it?
Really what happened was the Vatican named our organization as part of the problem for the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. And some of your listeners may remember that there was a kerfuffle a year ago, April, with the Vatican saying that Catholic Sisters' leadership in the United States was promoting radical feminist themes, and there was trouble. That whole process continues. But one of the pieces of information in that censure was they said that Network, our little organization of 9 full-time people at the time, was a problem because we were a bad influence on Catholic Sisters. And it was the attention from that censure that got us a lot of press attention. And then for us, it's always, how do we use this moment for mission? And we asked for help. And as a result of a meeting on May 14th, 2012, we came up with this bus trip idea. And it exploded way beyond our wildest imaginations.
What did it look like in your initial planning? What were you intending to do?
Well, our goal was to go out and to lift up the works of Catholic Sisters who would be decimated by the Paul Ryan budget, which had been passed by the House of Representatives at that point and was being sent to the Senate. And a lot of people don't know is that a lot of programs that faith folks do uses some federal money as a cornerstone funding for the programs. And it's sort of like unseen money. And so we wanted to lift up that reality of what it would do to these very fine programs, responsible programs. And we used the interfaith community had come together in D.C. to put together an alternative budget that we call a faithful budget. And we talked about the faithful budget as the faithful alternative to the Ryan budget. And it was a great opportunity to both speak about poverty and speak about economic responsibility in our society that doesn't have to be on the backs of people struggling every day in poverty.
And then on the tour, you visited sisters across the nation who were working in the community and safety net programs, correct?
Correct. That's what we did. We did 4 things every day. We visited sisters' work or places where sisters sponsor work. We did a lobby visit. We did press work, like talk to radio shows like you, and or did editorial boards, talk to reporters. And then in the evenings, we did what we called friend raisers, where every evening we gathered with folks who just wanted to hear the stories from the road and be connected. And what we discovered is that there are so many people that are so hungry for community that we had really large turnouts all along the way. It was a marvelous, amazing experience. It touches my heart deeply still.
Sister, do you find the social justice issues that you're working on today, are they much different than the social justice issues that the organization was working on 41 years ago? Or,
oh, that's a really good question. Sometimes you think, you worked 41 years, what have we accomplished? We ask that question periodically. But what we've discovered is that we've made some significant progress on some issues. Things like poverty, for working parents who have minor children, that the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit are 2 of the most effective anti-poverty programs, and we were quite involved in passage of those as tax policy many years ago, and they have been tremendously effective. Another very effective program that we were involved in the passage of is the SNAP program, which replaced food stamps, And right now it's under a very serious attack here in D.C., but it's one of the most effective anti-hunger programs that we've ever had as a nation.
Didn't SNAP...
So we can see a lot of progress, but it's one of those things. Do you look at and see the glass half full or half empty? So we know there's still a lot of work to be done. One of the biggest challenges that we're facing right now is that the minimum wage is not has not been increased in many years, and is now in California, the state minimum wage is higher. The federal minimum wage is $7.25, and the expectation or the to have the same buying power as minimum wage had in 1970, it would have to be like $12.50 an hour. So you can see that people working for minimum wage are really disadvantaged at this time. And so that's one of our big efforts right now, is try to get minimum wage on the agenda, as well as protecting the other programs that are working well. It's a big challenge, but we have made some progress. We still have more to do.
As a fellow Catholic sister, can I ask you, how does your sort of progressive approach to social issues, how do you find your way in navigating what is sometimes considered a fairly conservative religious structure?
I know. Isn't that surprising that our faith got kind of pigeonholed into this conservative framework by some? I mean, I think one of the challenges is that having a respect for the dignity of all individuals has, from the Catholic tradition, has gotten reduced down to just the abortion issue. And that really is not pro-life, in my view. That's pro-birth. And you've got to have this whole, a much broader perspective and struggle for the dignity of all individuals all the way along in life. So it's easy to do with our teaching. It's just the politics of some people make it challenging. But if you look at, we have all these documents. Actually, they're a little hard to read because they're translated from Latin, I understand. So they don't read really well, but they've got great material in them. Even Pope Benedict, who was not noted as the most justice-oriented of the popes, he was seen as pretty conservative, wrote this amazing letter called Charity and Truth. And in there he says, you cannot have charity until you have justice. And that justice includes governments that care for their people. That it is that the dignity of every individual needs to be supported by their government. And it's the responsibility of government to care for its citizens. I mean, that's seen as progressive politics in our country, but it really is Catholic social teaching at its heart.
Yeah. How do you answer the inevitable question of, you know, what about separation of church and state? What about render unto Caesar? What is Caesar's? What is your response to that?
Oh, the separation of church and state in the Constitution, I am this lawyer, so I think lawyerly, but the what that's about is the government action. The government can do nothing to promote religion or to impede religion. It doesn't say those of us who have faith can't be active. And in fact, Thomas Jefferson has this fabulous essay that he wrote about, one of our founding fathers, about how a democracy is going to require people of faith being involved in order to have the values, the deeper human values, as the touchstone for the way forward. And so from the beginning, we know you cannot, or we should not, divorce values from the work that we do in politics. And that's basically what we're doing. I am a person of faith, but the place we meet in the political realm is in the Constitution, and it's living within the Constitution to be we the people, trying to form this more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. That's what we're about. I come at it from faith, but it's not like I'm trying to make everybody share my faith. I just think we ought to make that these faith values also support our Constitution. That's the part we're struggling for.
Exactly. What are you going to be talking about at Irvine United Congregational Church next Saturday?
Well, I'm really excited is that we're going to be looking at some of the challenges that we're facing with regards to the economic, the income disparities that we're experiencing in our nation, how it's undermining our democracy, and then we're going to do some really exciting new work that we've just developed on what we can do to respond to that growing income and wealth disparities. Often we can lament, but my hope is that our work together will then allow us to find solutions, create new ways forward, and kind of stir us up to see that we can do something. We don't have to be powerless in the face of this. If democracy is going to work, we have to take our power and make it work.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate that. We know our listeners will look forward to your workshop and forum at Irvine United Congregational Church, and we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to being there.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're back in our studios live on Saturday at the Friendship Show. Just finished our conversation with Sister Simone Campbell. Let's go to a music break and come back with our discussion with our studio guest. This is Tracy Chapman talking about a revolution.
Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, run. About a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. And finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Oh no, talking about a revolution. Talking about a revolution.
We're back in our studios. This is Dawn Price on The Friendship Show. I'm here with Mark Miller and Scott Hayes. And we just finished our interview with Sister Simone Campbell of Network and Nuns on the Bus. She was an impressive lady.
Having grown up in the Catholic Church, I've met lots of nuns. I would put her in the top five.
Cool. Top five nuns. Mark Miller's top five nuns. We'll get to the other four later in the show. That's just a shout out to Mark's mom listening in Minnesota.
Oh, that's right. I so hope she's listening today. Hey, Mom, I'm talking about nuns.
We're in the studio today. We have, in addition to tape, two live people who are working at progressive Christianity and faith and values issues every day here in our community. We have Ken Wyant. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
And BJ Bew. Good morning, BJ.
Good morning.
Let's learn a little bit about both of you. Can you give us a quick background? You've got quite an eclectic background.
Yes, I was a pastor of churches for about 15 years and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati area, and then in Los Alamitos here in California. Then I've been managing affordable housing and working with affordable housing for about 20 years.
Here in California primarily?
Primarily in California, but I worked also with Volunteers of America in their affordable housing projects all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. And recently semi-retired?
Recently retired. I spent a year as a program director at Irvine United Congregational Church.
And you were part of the team that brought Sister Simone to Orange County.
Bill Allenbaugh is the hero of that that story. He got on the phone and made the arrangements.
Great, great. So that's coming up this coming Saturday. I'm sure you'll be there.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah. And BJ Bew is the pastor of Neighborhood Congregational Church here in Laguna Beach, frequent guest of the Friendship Show. Tell us a little bit, but you have some stuff in your background, I know, early in your career working with homeless people. And tell us a little bit about your journey.
I worked for a year as a seminarian with the Elders Living in Home program, finding housing for elders. And then I spent actually 2 years after that internship as case manager for the Elders Living in Home program in Boston. Mm-hmm. So found seniors who were homeless, transitional housing, and then eventually permanent housing in Boston.
Yeah. And then a pastor within the UCC since that time?
Pastor in the UCC, going on 18 years now, and served churches in Washington State and now down here in California, and been very involved with the rights of the homeless here in Laguna Beach. We feed the homeless, and we tend to be huge advocates. We try to do as much as we can behind scenes,
yeah.
But it's an important work, and we thank the Friendship Shelter for the good work that you're doing.
Well,
can
you.
I ask you both a question about housing, since you both have worked in that area? In your experience, were you identifying housing, or were you creating housing?
I was identifying. Well, we got in Boston, most of the housing came through the city, and we had traveling Section 8s, and there were Section 8s, and there were just public assisted housing that would find spots. But we actually created 8 units that we housed people while we found them permanent housing.
I created some units, mostly managed.
Well, I think that's just such an intersection with Friendship Shelter, because that's what we're trying to do right now, is create some additional housing. We're seeing the backlog of people stuck in shelter because they can't find housing.
I think it really is sort of one of the big issues that we've identified in our community is it's not really just a matter of identifying housing. It's the fact that the housing stock doesn't exist.
Exactly.
And and we're looking forward to hopefully making some progress in that area.
We are. Well, that's for a future show. That'll be exciting news to share. Sister Simone talked about how her faith has led her in these social justice directions. I would assume that's similar for the two of you.
Yes, very much.
How so?
Had an opportunity to work with faith-based affordable housing for most of my career, and it's really an opportunity to be in on helping other people. We're in this together. It's not an individual event. So it created an opportunity to do ministry and provide housing. A lot of people had a better place to live because of what we did through affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And when Sister Simone Campbell talked about her faith, she mentioned social justice. And that's a pretty natural segue into progressive Christianity. Because if there's a divide in religion today, it's that a lot of what you would consider conservative or fundamentalist Christianity is dealing primarily with issues of social piety. Who sleeps with whom? Where do they do it? Things like that. Whereas in the mainline traditions and in progressive Christianity, it really is a strong emphasis on social justice. This is a prophetic aspect of our faith. The issues of personal piety are really very tiny emphasis in our overall tradition, but the social justice is the heart of the law, and that's where we're focusing our efforts.
So when we talk about kind of, I would say, in some ways, on face value, disparate religious traditions between Sister Simone as a Catholic nun and the widely considered to be progressive United Church of Christ, that social, those social justice issues are the intersection?
They are, and they are also the intersection when you're dealing with interfaith. If you ever have an interfaith dialogue among Muslims and Buddhists and Christians and Jews and whatever other group, it's always going to be ethics. You're mm-hmm. never going to deal with just theology, because that just trails the train gets off the tracks very quickly. But ethics is where we all agree, and it is on social justice issues that we can agree.
I'm interested in your view, because this has been a bugaboo for me personally for a long time, and I think this comes from my own personal journey. Is very quick out of college, out of a Christian college environment, I landed working in reproductive rights, and I ended up at one of the first moral majority conferences in 1984 in Dallas as a reporter, and was just kind of blown personally by the assumption that faith had to lead in one political direction. And I'm wondering if you think we can that those things can be sort of pulled back apart, and that younger people in particular can see their faith as leading them in a variety of political directions, not necessarily one specific.
Absolutely. The tradition of social gospel is quite old in mainline Protestant religion and in Catholic religion as well, back to before the Civil War. The leaders of abolition movement were in Christian churches. 100 years ago, Walter Rauschenbusch is the name of a leader who was kind of a founder of social gospel movement. Harry Emerson Fosdick followed through with that in New York City. It's been the mainline Protestant position to be helpful to others, to be concerned about social justice and the welfare of the community for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. We just, go ahead.
Oh, and specifically in reproductive rights, it's important to have a broader, and we get so focused on the trees, we lose the forest. I actually like the Jewish position on reproductive rights. If you go to your rabbi and you say, "Rabbi, you know, I got pregnant, I really don't want this kid," the rabbi's going to say, "Tough luck. You know, you got pregnant, you're going to have the kid." If you go to that same rabbi and say, "Rabbi, I got pregnant, and I'm going to be emotionally devastated if I have to carry this baby to term," they'll say, "Fine, you're okay." And so it's a nuanced position. It's the health of the mother. It's the person that is existing right now has primacy, and that's a distinction and a subtlety that is lacking in almost all Christian discussion on that issue.
Interesting. Let's go to a music break, and we'll come back with our guests and our next. Oh, Ken, you chose this next song. You want to tell us about this?
Thank you. It's our Better Angels, and there are quotes here attributable to Abraham Lincoln and to Stonewall Jackson. So there's kind of an implicit sense of reconciliation in it. And it warns us our better angels are in danger, and they need to be aware and alert.
Great. This is Story Hill, Better Angels.
Better angels of our nature, stay awake now, you're in danger, the coming night is dark. Keep going forward. the horses are thirsty. They will protest. Tonight we'll water them in the Tennessee and cross over the river and rest in the shade.
The Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. I'm Dawn Price here with Mark Miller and Scott Hayes, and we're talking about progressive Christianity, the intersections of faith and justice in our society, and how people of faith interact with the political system and social justice issues. We have as our guest Ken Wyant, a minister and social activist and housing advocate, and B.J. Bew, the local minister of our neighborhood congregational church here in Laguna Beach. Let's continue our conversation. During the music, beautiful music, by the way, Ken, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We were talking about young people and how young people interact with faith. And I was citing a study. We've had my husband Jerry on the show, who's the dean of students at Chapman, and he was sharing with me that their most recent stats on incoming freshmen at Chapman find that for the first time, the combination of students who checked none under religion and other under religion hit 50%. So we've got 18 to 22-year-olds not feeling that faith communities are responding to what they need. What's your reaction to that, and how can we move them in the issue of social justice?
I think the main thing that's going on right now is that the church, for the most part, is stuck in a modern worldview. There are absolute truths. There are absolute certainties. There's one path. And our 18-year-olds, 22-year-olds, they are in a postmodern worldview. They have Hindu friends. They've got Buddhist friends. They've got Jewish friends. The truth is relative. They do not see the absolute that the church is trying to communicate, and they say, well, okay, if my gay friend is going to hell, I want nothing to do with Christianity. Of course, it doesn't have anything to do with Christianity. It has to do with a modern worldview. And so they are rejecting a tradition that has not adapted to a postmodern worldview, and that we will lose this generation if we cannot adapt to that.
And yet this generation is more than ever, or at least as much as in recent history, interested in social justice issues. So why that dichotomy, Ken?
Eventually, it's a matter of coming together. Sister Simone talked about the importance of building coalitions, of bringing nuns together in response to social justice issues. Sooner or later, all of these people who are spiritually committed, who are aware of the differences amongst their friends and acquaintances, will come together and find opportunity to make common cause to move forward some social agendas.
And that, yeah, that point, that college point, that young person worldview, as you say, part of that journey is understanding self-identity, and spirituality can be a big part of that. So why is it that religion isn't playing a role?
Well, and that's a problem, because quite frankly, if you want to do good works in the world, join a Rotary Club. I mean, they're trying to stamp out, you know, diseases all over the world. You look at, well, what Bill Gates is doing. I mean, these are sectarian groups. You do not have to join a religious organization to do social justice around the world. And the church is losing because it is insisting on a very narrow slice of a faith tradition to say, if you're not in our faith tradition, then that's the root. It's like, well, it's inbred in all of us, and we used to claim that we have got to be more open to where people actually are, instead of saying, well, once you join us and accept our views, then of course you can do the good works that we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to fly.
The progressive church tradition is inclusive and is eager to hear from people who have differences of opinion, eager to empower people who bring questions and challenges about faith into the church. It's a terrific opportunity to grow the progressive church.
And what the progressive church does, what church does, is build community. I mean, Friendship Shelter works because while people are in the program, they are building community. They are learning how to interact with folks. They are learning how to live in community. And that's probably one of the most important components of your program. And the church builds community better than any other organization. We have just got to get our theology out of the way. And one of the, we haven't talked about it yet. I can't believe we haven't talked about it yet. But one of the differences between, let's say, a fundamentalist tradition and a progressive tradition is a fundamentalist tradition will take the Bible literally. And people say, well, do you take the Bible literally? It's like, no, I take the Bible seriously. If I take the Bible literally, I can't take it seriously.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's just so many contradictions in the Bible. And if you go to, if you read Genesis 1.
For those of you listening on the radio, that was a big, deep, heavy sigh.
I'm really sorry. Okay.
From the
All you've got to do is read the first chapter of the first book. There's all this water. Okay, so God separates the water. So there's water above, there's water below, and there's this firmament that God creates to separate the waters. Now, we've got the Hubble Space Shuttle and the telescope. Where's all this water? We don't live in this worldview. It's just not there. And to say, well, you know, the stories of Genesis are historically accurate is absurd. Methuselah lives to 900 years old. Yeah, we believe that because of the great health care back then. It's people that are forced to believe stories that were never meant to be taken literally, as if they were literally true. This generation is not going to buy it overall.
Goes back to the foundations of the Christian church. Most folks assume that Jesus roamed around, some of his followers wrote a gospel, and people decided they needed to get involved in a community and established a church. Actually, was kind of the other way around. The community developed Bible stories, developed stories that became gospel message. Took them 100 years or so to pull all of that together. The Gospels are a response to the church, not the church in response to the Gospels.
Interesting. And so, BJ, your original point, I think I got you off track a little bit. This literalism is, in your view, pushing some people away from the church?
Well, to be fair to the fundamentalist tradition, the stories of Scripture were always mythic. They're always mythic. They were history-like stories or story-like history. And what happened in the Enlightenment was the Enlightenment came along and they read the Gospels and they read the miracle stories and they said, the stories of the New Testament miracles are false. Fundamentalism was a response to that Enlightenment. They said, it is false that the stories of the Bible are false. It's a double negation. Mm. So what you end up with is the stories of the Bible are true, and then the stories of the Bible are literally true. And that's when the wheels came off the wagon, because it was never really done that way. I mean, the minute you have to ask, are the stories true, you're outside the story.
Interesting.
You know, my mother goes to Hawaii. My mother can't stand the Christian literal stories of the Bible. It just gets up her nose. But she goes to Hawaii and she listens to a Hawaiian, native Hawaiian, talking about how this turtle who carried the world on its back, and she just loves it, because for that guy telling the story, those stories are real. Those stories are, he's inside the myth. And the myth is dead for a lot of us, and that's fundamentally the problem. We're either trying to tell young kids they need to believe a myth they don't believe in, they're never going to believe in, mm-hmm. or we say, well, there's nothing there but some kernels of story that, you know, you can take it or leave it. And that's where the church is right now.
Does activism help, in your either of your view, bring people back to faith communities, when faith communities get involved in social justice issues, when things like the Nuns on the Bus tour and Sister Simone advocating from her point of view as a religious leader as well as a justice leader, does that bring people back to church?
People want to be inspired. People want something to believe in. When you meet the genuine article, when you meet Sister Simone Campbell, and she believes what she does, that's infectious. And young people today want to make a difference in the world. And when you meet somebody of faith, and when you realize her faith brought her here, I want to know more about that. The response when people were asked about Jesus, the response was always, come and see. It mm-hmm. wasn't, let me tell you everything about Jesus so that you can come. It's like, just come and see. So you invite people to a program where we're going to make a difference in this world. What's it about? Come and see. That's the response. And then when they meet people who are infected with faith, faith is not taught. Faith is caught.
What do you mean by that?
You meet someone else who has faith, like my grandmother, and you realize, I want this. I want this. This is amazing. She has something that I do not have.
So that's the attraction.
It's the attraction. And you're doing the things that you believe in. It's got to be both.
What do you see as the main issues for progressive Christians right now? And this goes to either of you in terms of what changes need to happen. Sister Simone talked about minimum wage issues. I know the most recent Nuns on the Bus tour was involved immigration issues. Prior to that, it was federal budget priorities. What are the burning issues that you're seeing that progressive Christians are addressing?
Environment is an important issue that progressive churches are addressing. And I'm seeing some fundamental churches beginning to address that that issue as well. Issues that say we're in this together, and the problems are going to be resolved by all of us together. Those are issues of progressive church. It's not that we're individuals deriving our personal welfare, taking it away from someone else. That just doesn't work. It's the collective message. We're going to resolve economic inequality. We're going to resolve environment. We're going to resolve issues of borders on the basis of what we can do together. And we're all in this together. We can't handle it alone as just individuals isolated in the world.
Yeah, environmental issues are huge. Justice issues are huge. Poverty, women's rights, reproductive rights, human trafficking. These are issues that young people, the gay rights, these are issues that young people are concerned about, and the church is really opening to, and that's going to make us truly keep us relevant.
Does it become BJ, an issue of morality? Is the struggle over where morality falls?
It is. It's a definition of what morality is, and I appreciate the comment that the fundamentalist churches are actually really they're bucking some of their political caucuses because they're becoming interested in creation. But what is morality? Is morality personal piety, or is morality social justice? And that's the bigger fight. Because once we, you know, once you get in the abortion issue, you never get out of it. But if you can step back and say, what makes something a moral issue? Is it a matter of personal piety? Is it about who you sleep with, how you, you know, what happens in your personal body? Or is it what's going on in the social justice world? And once you have to fight it at that level, and once you do, then morality becomes about the bigger issues.
I have to tell you, I had lunch with someone just yesterday who works on social issues, and what she said to me is that civilizations are judged by how they care for the sickest of the sick and the poorest of the poor. And these are the issues that we should be focused on.
Absolutely.
Let's take a quick music break before we come back to, I can't believe we do this every week. It's 10 till 10 already. Before we come back to wrap up, this is Jack Johnson's version of Imagine.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. And no hell below us. And above us is only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion to. Imagine all the people living life for peace. And you may say that I'm a dreamer, but I am not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. And you may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one.
We're back. It's the Friendship Show on Saturday morning on KX 93.5, Laguna's only FM. Let's one more time, Mark, before we close out our topic, tell people about the fundraiser again.
Oh, and I looked it up online. It's November 2nd.
All right.
Is when that happened. So huge lineup, Festival of the Arts on the fairgrounds. Go to kx935.com, order your tickets online.
And you'll be kicking back that day because the night before you will have been at Friendship Shelter's 25th anniversary gala. Yeah. At the Ritz-Carlton in your Gatsby finest.
It's going to be a busy, busy weekend.
Yeah, so you'll be all you know, fancy on Friday night, and then you go to your kickback musical festival
on
Saturday.
I have to tell you, someone stopped me the other day and said, Mark, I've ordered a Tux with Tails for you for November 1.
My goodness.
I know, so we'll see.
We'll see. I'm excited now. Where our topic today is progressive Christianity. This topic came to us largely because we heard about Sister Simone Campbell of Network and Nuns on the Bus, who's going to be here in Orange County next Saturday, the